Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. First of all, on behalf of the Qumran Report and the Skid Row Studios, we would like to offer our condolences to the family of those who lost loved ones in the Connecticut elementary school shooting. Now, this week, we will be talking about voices from the Skid Row community with poet Carmen Vega and artist Marlon Polk. Carmen and Marlon, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Melvin.
Thank you, Melvin. Yeah.
First of all, I would like to ask you, what's your thoughts about the shooting, the Connecticut shooting at the elementary school? Let's start with Carmen.
Well, when you hear something so tragic like that, I think a lot of people respond by wanting to, you know, make sense out of it. And the fact is that it's tragic and it doesn't make any sense. And then you want to find solutions, a way to, you know, plug up the hole so it doesn't happen again. And there's a lot of elements that probably go into solving such a social mayhem that causes that kind of an event. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's almost like you first have to step back and settle in and then go back and figure out really what needs to happen, because there's a lot of elements out there that need a lot of help, you know, mm-hmm. like the mental health divisions and the gun. Everything is all part of this confluence that's causing our society to just go awry. So,
mm-hmm. How about you, Mama?
Well, we have external and internal elements involved. The external, we talk about, you know, the political situation with, you know, gun control and what have you. But my concern is always the internal, the things that happens in a home, values that need to be placed, principles. And me, you know, it always starts with spiritual principles. You know, anytime we get away from God, there's mayhem. Mm-hmm. And we can send our kids to church, we can send them to school, we can send them to special programs. But if there's no programming at home, all that's in vain.
Okay. Earlene?
It's just really a tragedy, like we've all said. And it's just even hard to comprehend it just watching it over the television. I just can't imagine how the parents would, you know, act. I'm sure many of them are still in shock, as you know, as it really didn't happen at all. But I know everyone has cried their tears, and you know you can feel their pain. And it seems like many times we ask why, and seem like if we know the why of something, it's not so devastating if we know why it happened, or you know what happened would, you know, that would make someone act in this manner to kill children as well as grown-ups.
Okay. All right. Now, right at the top of the show, we have a caller. Who do I have online? Hello? Hello? Okay, we'll come back to the...
they hung up.
Yeah, we'll come back to the caller. My co-host, Earlene Anthony, will interview our in-studio guest, one of our in-studio guests, Carmen Vega.
Carmen, again, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Earlene.
Tell us a little about yourself, and how did you get involved with the LAMP community?
Well, a little about myself. I studied writing as a screenwriter a while ago. And I never really pursued that because I started writing poetry and performing. And boy, was that lucrative. but it was really where my heart went. And even though I couldn't see the gold at the end of the rainbow, it was where my heart and my emotions brought me. And I've never denied myself where I wanted to go. When I did my poetry book, it was very clear in my mind That's what one thing I wanted to have when I did a CD with a rock and roll band. That was very clear to me. I remember it was 2 years before I 2 years to the day that I actually released the CD that I had asked this young woman who was playing guitar if she wanted to play with me. And it didn't happen with her. But I said, you know, I'm just kind of thinking of this CD with rock and roll. And about a year, actually more like a year and a half later, I had that CD. And then a lot of things happen in life, you know, where things became very vague. And they led me to do a whole bunch of other different things with the practical sense, which I think was kind of like a way that I veered off from my creativity. Lo and behold, a lot of elements brought me to the downtown Skid Row community. I actually went by coincidence to LAMP after having spoken to this other young woman about the fact that I had a 10-week writing curriculum already set up for a program that I had done years ago, and I was trying to figure out what to do with it. She said, I'll try and figure out and maybe go to a community college or something like this and bring it over there and see what they say. Well, when I submitted it, they didn't accept it. And then she said, you know, there's also this thing at LAMP on a whole nother level about, uh-huh. They have an artist thing. And yeah. And I'm like, well, you know, painting is about the only thing that I do as a release. Don't look at my work, but it helps me emotionally. So I went there to actually partake of their art program. And by chance, I spoke again to another young woman who was sitting at the table. And she struck me like a musician or something. And she says, I really like writing. And then I started a conversation with her. We were both kind of like doing this art workshop. And I said, well, I have this curriculum I'm edging to put together. And by coincidence, Hike, the guy who runs the workshop there, heard me. And he said, well, why don't you bring it to LAMP? So that's how that happened.
Uh-huh. Right.
He just overheard me talking to one of the people there. So again, it was this kind of coincidental thing that ultimately is not that coincidental, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're conducting a poetry workshop entitled The Writer in You. It's a creative writing workshop to liberate and stimulate poetry writing. Your next workshop will be Thursday, December 20th, from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the LAMP community. And the LAMP community is located at 526 San Pedro Street, Los Angeles. Tell us a little about the workshop.
Okay. Well, like I said, it came about by virtue of the fact that, I mean, I have like a regular job and I have all this creative energy. I've been involved in theater with a couple of groups, including Drama Stage Krumran a little while ago. But I have a lot of writing skills that I just felt like edgy and I wasn't doing very much with. In terms of sharing, I just felt like I really wanted to bring something back to this community that has given me so much.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of a place to be, a place where I've actually, you know, I could go out my door and I now get to greet my neighbors and say hello. You know, it feels like a community. That's one thing that happens downtown a lot that a lot of people don't recognize.
Oh, yeah.
Or I know where to go if I'm bored on a Friday night. And that happens in a community. Uh-huh. Or you can talk to the store owner because you know them by name. Uh-huh. But the LAMP community, the first writing workshop, I wanted to just let people relax and be aware of how easy it can be to allow yourself to just write. So I took them through a couple of exercises. I always incorporated a writing segment with a sharing segment, allowing the participants to read or not to read. It wasn't mandatory. I wanted there to be a comfort level, and I wanted there to be a place where everyone could feel safe nonetheless when they read. So those are conditions that I set up for the workshop, and I felt it was pretty, everyone participated, everyone did what was asked of them. You know, if I said, you know, we're going to write for 2 minutes, don't stop, there was no edging, you know, whatever. They all got the concept of consciousness, stream of consciousness writing, which is a technique that I was implementing at the time. And when they did share their work, it was very clear that they did, you know, they did the writing. So that's the first part of writing. You got to put the pen to paper and put it down.
Right.
And then the next comes structure and other things that I will, you know, walk them through. In fact, our guest here, well, he was there. He was there for part of the class. So I'm wondering.
Yeah, when I briefly got, you know, there was a relaxing mode there. I noticed that some of the participants had anticipated something rigid and, you know, hard. But when Carmen laid down the foundation, and instead of laying down just the foundation, she was tearing down walls that would sometimes hinder people from wanting to express themselves. You know, so I saw something in her where she was able to take the edge off. But I didn't seem to find a conclusion, but I was told that everybody felt a part of.
And Carmen, what is your process for creating poetry? Do you have a process?
My personal process?
Yes.
Well, most of the time I write when I feel like I need to say something and nobody's listening. And paper doesn't object to what I have to say. Paper lets me talk and say whatever I feel. So basically, that's my mode of expression. It's my easiest mode of expression is just to put it down on paper. I used to do a lot more journaling. Lately, I've been working a little bit since I've been working more with theater. I've been working on longer form, and it's a very different process. And to say that I started out writing long form, because I started out writing screenplay, at least that's where I was trained, but my impetus was to go into poetry. I think it's because of the symbolism and the figurative language that's there. It's a quick connection to your subconscious and what your real feelings and your emotions are where they're dwelling. Maybe I come from a situation where my feelings were not easily expressed, you know? And therefore, paper and poetry create that open door for me. And I can say oftentimes it's anger. You know, I'm angry at something or something doesn't make sense, and the paper allows me to synthesize and put it together.
And how is writing poetry related to recovery?
I'm sorry, what?
How is writing poetry related to recovery?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't do the writing workshop as a mode for recovery. However, one thing that became very clear to me is that people, it's like releasing a pressure valve. Because when you allow an individual to express themselves, and there were also certain things that happened by virtue of these. You provide structure, and the structure will lead the mind to do what it's kind of liberating. I mean, I genuinely say this on my flyer that it is a creative writing workshop that liberates and stimulates poetry writing. And I think my stimulus was to create very simple but structured techniques or element workshops that I say, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to write about an object, or we're going to write about this, or write about whatever without stopping for this amount of time. Or sometimes I did introduce an image or something, but what happens is these are just triggers. And the triggers allow you to just kind of allow to go on and on and on. And in that process, the mind gets to express itself. So for me, I think that's what it does for that recovery community that oftentimes works, or rather exists, in a very repressed and in a very angry state, or perhaps an individual who's seeking to soothe their emotions is not dealing with their emotions. Poetry, that's exactly where your voice has to go.
Okay. Wow, that's great.
Okay, let's go to our other in-studio guest, Marlon Pope. He's a performing artist and musician. You heard him a little earlier. He was with us last week also, and he's back this week, and this time he brought his flute, and he'll be playing live in the studio in the latter part of the show. Marlon, can you tell us a little about how you got involved with music?
Well, it goes all to when I first started off as an infant. Mm-hmm. Babysitter's mom had me stay with. They had different type of music. And I know like my godmother or my grandmother or just people in the neighborhood, I would hear, I remember the classical music. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I remember some of the pictures and paintings that was around. And they were of all, you know, paintings of all kind, you know, just the Renaissance era and all that. So it all came together. And this was like an eye gate was open, my ear gate was open, and I took all this in as a kid. And as I grew, you know, I just had a love for music. I had a love for art, period.
What was your first instrument that you was trained on?
Believe it or not, it was piano.
Piano, yes.
We never owned a piano, but my neighbors, my friends, they had pianos in the home, and I'm up there playing on them, yeah, experimenting.
Yeah.
You know, and today it's still it's still amazing, mm-hmm, how they put up with it.
Mm-hmm. How about the flute?
Well, the flute, did you pick up that was flute? Interesting. That's a good question. I picked up the flute. It was handed to me while I was in the 12th grade. It was handed to me while I was in the 12th grade. At that time, I was into theater, real big time. And I was a runner-up for best actor at the time. Mm. And towards my graduation, my neighbor had a flute, and he gave it to me. And I learned that flute within 6 months' time because I had previously, the only formal training I ever had was in junior high school for Boys Glee. Mm-hmm. But I took that serious. It was more just about singing. It was about reading notes, learning notes. So, you know, that's what started it all.
So you say you was running up and out. What plays have you performed in then? Do you remember some plays?
One of my best plays I remember doing was A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
And believe it or not, that was at a rehab, a Warm Spring.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. When did you first hear about Skid Row?
On and off, I guess after I got out of the military, I heard a lot of things about Skid Row.
Yeah, how did this come about with someone?
Well, being raised in Long Beach and everything, but I had to make a confession. You know, I've had my bouts with drugs and alcohol, and people would talk about Skid Row and, you know, all the drugs was heavily, and kind of scared me, even though I was doing drugs. That scared me, you know. But,
the first time that you came to Skid Row, when did that first come about? How did that come about?
Well, I was, I'm a veteran waiting for housing through HUD VASH, and from Long Beach, I was referred to a place in L.A., and then a certain place in L.A. referred me over here to the Vanguard. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, here I find myself on Skid Row.
That's the first time,
very first time.
Oh, and how did you find out about the Lamp community?
Well, people were, they would hear me playing the flute. Mm-hmm. And they kept telling me, hey, you know the guy, Tony Ocean? I said, no, who's Tony Ocean? And they said, the guy, the soloist, the movie was based on. Mm-hmm. Well, they doing, this is the Lamp. And I heard this about the Lamp, how they had a studio where musicians would go. But at that time, I was somewhat into myself. Not in a selfish way, but I just needed some downtime to get adjusted and process things, you know, my environment and habitats. And I was particular about who I would play with anyway, you know. And so people was telling me about Hike and telling me how to go about getting some studio time. So finally, one day, I took it upon myself to finally go and check it out, you know. And I'm glad it was the right time, mm-hmm, you know, and everything, because I met Hike not through somebody else, but we just met, mm-hmm, each other. And, you know, the image that I had was totally different until I met Hike.
Okay. Now, also, let me ask you this. How can the performing arts like music and theater fit into the recovery process?
Okay.
What are your thoughts on that?
Performing arts and being a musician and all, for me, like I said, in my early childhood, I was somewhat introverted. Mm-hmm. And I needed a way to express myself because I was a person of many ideas. And my sanctuary was in books. You know, I was somewhat reclusive. And books were my habitat. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even stay at school, mm-hmm. you know, long periods of time. Didn't want to come home. I wanted to stay at school in libraries. I hung out at the libraries. But then the music came. And like I said, for me, it was a way to release. Mm-hmm. Whether it was negative or positive energy, and express myself.
And yeah, you know, some of the most famous jazz musicians, you know, when they used to have Central Avenue, all the great jazz musicians
right.
come up here. And a lot of people used to wonder whether or not music or the artist's life contribute to addiction. Because, you know, a lot of your famous musicians, you know, Charlie Yard, Bert Parker, and all of them, was deeply hooked on heroin and stuff like that during that time. So it can go both ways. You know, you can be an artist, can push a person so hard that they start using drugs and stuff, but it's also a recovery process and helping them also.
You know, I think a person just, I don't really think the arts in any way
yeah.
promotes or induce drug habits,
yeah.
I think that's just something in a person, period.
Yeah.
For me, when I wasn't doing my music or I couldn't express myself, then it was about the drugs or the alcohol.
Now the great musician Miles Davis, he used to talk about the fact that all of these other little young musicians, when they came in contact with Charlie Parker, right? And he was such a gifted, creative musician. He was doing all this different stuff and like that. And they were wondering how he was doing this. And they know he was an addict shooting up heroin and all like that. So that's how a lot of the little young musicians, that's how Miles
they perceived him.
Yeah, they thought that was the secret. And he
yeah,
started
it
shooting
wasn't.
Up and got hooked and all like that. And then he finally went cold turkey, cleaned himself up and all that kind of stuff like that. But anyway, we're going to come back and talk about that a little bit more in the second half. Let's move to our community calendar.
This is our community calendar for the month of December. Thursday, December 20th, from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. There is a free workshop, Carmen Vega and the Lamp Fine Arts Program presents The Writer in You. This is a creative writing workshop to liberate and stimulate poetry writing. The location is at the Lamp Village Community Room, 526 San Pedro Street, downtown Los Angeles. And we had Carmen on earlier, and she gave quite a bit of information about this. Also, the next Qumran Report, our guest will be on Monday, January the 7th, 2013 will be Reginald Fagan. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Erlene Anthony. The call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host, Melvin Johnson.
Hey, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. Thank you very much. Now, let's open up our roundtable for comments in the discussion with our in-studio guests, Ms. Carmen Vega, Marlon Pope. First question I would like to throw out is, how can the artistic community improve the life of the Skid Row community? Let's throw this out. Let's talk about that first.
Well, I think anytime you're involved with art, you're involved with allowing your creativity and your ideas to flow. And that creates a liberation where you can actually grow by looking at possibilities, mm-hmm. and looking at your community and seeing what it could be rather than what it is right now. You know, how can it flourish? How can we change it? How can it become better?
Mm-hmm.
A creative and artistic site, you know, someplace where people can be allowed to do an expression on canvas, on writing, as music, and everything else, would just be allowing an individual to grow in all aspects of that individual. Mm-hmm. Not just, you know, it's great that we can work and feed ourselves and have a place to live and provide that, but art is an essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I was hoping, you know, when I think about Skid Row and I look for the future, I'd be trying to visualize a space, something like what happened in Memphis with Beale Street or Harlem, the whole Harlem community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the future, when people think about Skid Row, they won't think just about the homeless or the recovery zone, even though the recovery zone is part of it, but they also think about some jazz clubs or some blues clubs or the regular community down there. So that's what I think in terms of how the arts could really, really contribute to the Skid Row community. What do you think, Mom?
You know, first I want to just revert to a proverb that talks about a diamond being covered with dross.
Mm-hmm.
And once you remove all the dross, you get to the diamond. And that's what arts is for. It can give something to people to make them either appreciate art or make them even want to be a part of the art. And in this process, takes away that dross.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the negative elements that surrounds them, they are encompassed in. And once we get to that diamond, because I think every person, every human being is a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
But they just had to get to that diamond.
Mm-hmm.
In art, whatever, whether it be performing, visual, literature, whatever the case be, it helps take away that dross.
Okay. Earlene?
I think part of the performing arts is essential to the community. There's so many artists in Skid Row, and performers and theater people in this just landed in Skid Row. And I was thinking as she was asking the question, I know on Wednesdays there's a karaoke night, especially over at the Church of the Nazarene. And usually people are just waiting to get in line because it's so popular. People want to come and sing and perform and show their crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a very essential thing for the people in Skid Row,
mm-hmm.
an outlet for them. And it's a safe place to come.
Okay. All right. Anybody else want to say anything else about
well,
that?
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, there artists, like even in New York City, whenever artists took over a community, it became the thing, the place to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was in the village, once the artist, you know, then of course artists, being who we are, have to move on to the things that have become more affordable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're still struggling artists. But, you know, the same thing happened in Williamsburg. The same thing happened in all kinds of neighborhoods back east, you know? And similar with downtown. You have all kinds of loft areas downtown where the artists kind of created that space for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's about looking, having the opportunity to broaden your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
This community doesn't have to stay like this. You know, you can change.
Now, how do you think we get the different segments of the community to work together, like the loft people? Because you got so many different elements down. You got the loft people, you got the homeless people laying in the streets, you got the people in recovery, you got the just regular community people that live down here. How do you think we can develop a relationship among these particular groups for the better of the entire area?
I think that's beginning to happen. I mean, I think what happens is if you create a space where these communities can merge and recognize that they will live in the same place.
Yeah.
You know, that last bookstore
mm-hmm.
is an incredible place.
Yeah.
for that, because you have people from the lofts and Skid Row and everywhere else, and their events are attended by everybody, and even people from outside of LA. And I think for me, that feels more and more like, that's what I'm saying, downtown begins to feel more and more like a community that's broadened, and then people can recognize that not everybody in downtown Skid Row is strung out on drugs. The level of crime that happens is really way less than people anticipate. Not that it doesn't happen, not that there aren't cops out there, you know, breaking people apart every once in a while. But for the most part, it's more police activity that we see than the actual crimes that are being committed.
And
Skid Row, for sure, is riddled with a lot of drugs, and that's a big problem in our community. You know, and that has to be addressed at some point. But on the other hand, as we provide more alternatives for that kind of activity, and we have healthier activity for people to choose, I think that begins to make a huge difference.
Yeah, because that's a major contradiction and paradox to me, is the fact that you have the largest recovery zone in probably the United States, but at the same time, you got so much drug dealing and stuff that's jumping off right in the middle of the recovery zone, right next to the facilities and
police department.
Yeah, and I think I'm sorry to interject, but I heard this young man the other day, and it just kind of like, oh, it struck me. He was young, and he was on the phone, and it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I had gotten home early, and I was on Main Street, and he's on the phone and off his back. He's like, "Hey, man, I want you to get me something. Get me something for me to get high or get drunk or something. I'm off. I want to be happy." What an alternative.
Yeah.
You know, this meant for this young man to be happy, to zone out and drown out your senses. You know, that's where we, some of our people, that's where they are.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask this. Let's talk about our young people for a while. What can we do to create more jobs and after-school programs for our young people? You want to start there, Marla? What can we do?
As far as activities, we had to have a lot more people want to step up and be volunteers. You know, like when I was coming up, it was all about the big brothers. You know, do you want to be a big brother and stuff? And that's what it's all about, community coming together, people who are doing something, productive people who have some time. Or even if they don't have time, they can implement something. You know, to where they can help those who are putting in the footwork to go out there and reach out to these people. When I say these people, the young people, you know, because you'd be amazed to one person can do in order to change the world. So when you get a group of people coming together, man, it's amazing that the impact we can have.
And I always say, when I've been looking at these communities close, is I think the one of the key elements that we must focus in on is that concept of violence, because I think that's where everything is tied into. When you have a community where you have a threat of violence or too much violence going on, these are the type of communities in which a big business, they're not coming there to set up, and this is what creates jobs. See, if we think about jobs for our young people, not just in the downtown Skid Row community as a whole need jobs, we're going to have to clearly look at this concept of violence.
You know, when I was in high school, even in junior high school, even the school programs had jobs. You know, it was a special government thing that had gone on at the time. I remember when I got my first job in the school, I was a lifeguard. You know, and this was doing school hours, you know, and it was just all kind of different jobs.
Yeah.
Secretary, you know, I saw people doing secretarial jobs in administration, building. And this is why we were still either, you know, they call it middle school today, but junior high school back then, all the way up to our high school. And, you know, we worked together, whether we were Black, Asian, Hispanic. You know.
And I remember that they had the CEDAR program.
That was the CEDAR program.
Yeah. This is a program that we need right now.
I would say that instead of jails.
We need that CEDAR
program. Investing money in jail.
Because it was a federally funded program.
Yes.
It provides Most of it went on during the summertime, you know, when a lot of youngsters was out of school. But it allowed them to accumulate enough money, you know, to buy clothes, books, whatever, for the school coming up. And when they destroyed the CEDA program, this was the beginning of all this violence and gang banging and stuff that you saw in the in the community.
Well, you know, going back, you say it was a summer program, but for some of us, they still had it going on through the fall, winter. Mm-hmm. And I guess my job in a lifeguard, it was all year round.
Yeah. And we need it now. Now, what can we do to create more unity among our young people, especially racial unity? Because we got to build a better generation for the next generation. And I think we need to get past this this racial thing that's still here. Anyone want to say a few words on that?
Well, I think I mentioned it last time I was on your show, Melvin, that I believe that there needs to be like a think tank. Local think tanks that address issues within a community, actually to create these jobs, to ask your local, government sources for funding for programs that train people and pay them to get trained in things that we need, to meet our immediate needs, whatever they may be, and to work from within, not to have somebody out from the outside come in and tell you what to do and how to do it. Because most of the time we know, and there needs to be a lot of that, the segregational discussion, we need to placate that and start really looking at the fact that we are ultimately one race. And so to start looking at these designations of color as a device, as a division that creates more weakness rather than strength. It's important to know your culture, and it's important to know where you come from, and it's important to know your roots, because that gives you strength.
Yeah.
You know, a tree without roots ain't going to go very far, but there's going to be multiple trees, and there's going to be a great variety for the forest to flourish. That's the poet in me.
And also, I'm going to get to what Earlene always mentioned about these professional schools, because I think that we also going to have to look at this particular, people like to call them the crack generation, people that got caught up all in that. They ended up going to the joint, coming out. Now, a lot of them spent 10, 12, 15 years in the system. Now they're back, this whole realignment thing like that. And I think we need to look at something on how we're going to retrain a huge portion of our population that got caught up in that. And, you want to say something about these professional schools?
Right. I mentioned that before. A lot of people are taking advantage of the professional schools, like they're trained to be nurses' assistants, dental assistants, or counselors, or whatever. This is a way I see to get people back into mainstream society, getting jobs, because a lot of people don't have GEDs, and that's the way that you can get a GED. It's available and to be retrained. Many people don't know how to use a computer. Many people don't even know how to go to a job interview. Many people don't know what to wear at a job interview. People are talking about jobs, but there are a lot of young guys out there. It's like no one is going to hire you if you're sagging and bagging and your shorts are showing. No one is going to want to hire you, but even if you go to a professional school, while you're going, there's grant money available to cover the cost of the course while you're going. So while you're even going to school, you have some monies coming in. You don't just have to hang on the corners and, do nothing day in and day out. You know, there's more to us than that.
Okay, let's move to, I want to move to our, anymore, we'll get back to some closing comments, but I want to move to our open mic session here. We have two great artists in here from the LAMP community. I hope we have some people out there from the LAMP community listening live. Now.
We represent.
I don't know that, but.
Hope you guys cool. tell people you were going to be on.
Well,
we
I'm
sent out a
LAMP
few
community.
Emails saying you were going to be on.
Okay, so first we have Carmen Vega. She's going to read a couple poems for us. The first one is called Journal.
Journal. All right, this was inspired by, well, you'll see. Journal. First inscription, June 3rd, 1001. And I just ruined it because I misspelled the year. I listened to Junot Diaz speak about Negro side in his native Dominican Republic. How interesting. It was, or rather he is, an inspiration. What he said, a truly genuine person that learned to play the games they play in those literary circles. But nevertheless, the day will come when I look at the profundity of my past and none of this will be that significant. As with him, it took him 5 years after he received money to continue writing. But me, since I've always been rich, money doesn't astonish me, and I've never missed it much. Well, I suppose that even if I had $2 million or three, or the $5 I have in my pocket, it does not matter. I write with paper and pen and without company because I do not have anyone to read my authentic clarity other than myself or anyone who might be interested. And there are a few. And at the same time, their numbers grow after they hear me. But sometimes I diminish myself to think I am not hip-hop, though I respect others' right to create what truly inspires them. And I'm inspired by the depth of the sea and the distance of the stars, and inevitably by the stench on the street after the garbage truck has gone by. Or when I'm on the bus with those people who don't bathe, observing the little humanity we have left. We've hardly remnants left of being human, a society without aid for others' pain. It's as if to say, well, what is mine is what matters, and I save myself. And when I see those people around, I best cross the street so as not to come near them, that I may catch AIDS or those other forgotten tragedies like cancer or tuberculosis. But what ingenuous persons that no longer look at the sidewalk and walk on air. And here I write with pen and paper, and the world turns and daylight dies. On a new occasion I awake, I dress, and off to work I go to earn my daily bread. And again I contemplate the sun and await the return of the stars, because as soon as night falls, I step out to the veranda and I see how rich I am.
Okay, Carmen Vega. Beautiful. What's the next one? New Moon Rising.
You want me to do that one?
Yeah.
Wow, I have to take a breather. Okay. New Moon Rising. You want to know where I'm from before you know my name? Banner, my banner, I've heard all that lame game. I wish we'd drop the flags and accept us as humans, but we don't. Category, allegory, gory, glory be thy name is mead from a meadow peeking from beneath the shrapnel. After the war is over, what labels will we bestow upon the flesh of our Savior? Wait, where are you from? I'm from a new moon rising over the horizon of an unseen sun that's yet to be tagged. Tagged, tagged, tags. We wear them now embedded on our forehead. Brands. Brand named Joey with a tight skin. Willie, he's a captain, sergeant at arm's length, tagging away, tag. I'm from a new moon rising over the horizon of an unseen sun that's yet to be, that's yet to be, that's yet to be.
Hey, Carmen Vega.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, now we're going to move on to our next artist, musician Marlon Pope. He's going to play that flute over there for us, and Carmen going to read a piece. So, Marlon Pope.
From Psalms 139.
I'm reading your psalm piece here?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Give me a second. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue. But behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before, and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings off the morning and I dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you. You, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they all were written, the days fashioned for me when as I yet there were none of them. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them, the sum of them.
Marlon Poe, Carmen Vega. Now, let me ask you a question, Marlon.
Yes. I know that was Psalm 139.
Yeah, from the Psalms of David, right?
Yeah.
What was David's instrument?
The harp. And I'm going to learn to play the harp. I want to learn to play strings.
Yeah. He's probably one of your most noted musicians in the Old Testament.
Yes.
Is that all he played, just the harp?
He played the harp. Yeah, okay. That's the only one.
King David.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go around for a few closing comments. We still got a little time. Voices from the Skid Row community. Closing comments. Let's start with Marlon.
Yeah, getting back to what we were talking about as far as the arts, promoting some self-worth in the community. There's just so much the arts can do. Not just in community, where we deal with people who's having problems like in Skid Row, but music is something that should be implemented throughout every aspect of people's being. You know, I don't care what degree or what status, you know. I noticed one thing about in the hospital when it comes to arts, whether, you know, color makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. The paint is in everything. The
visual,
on the wall, the visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes a person who's going to have some pains or get ready to see, you know, anticipating the worst when it comes to some wounds that may have occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And even what the nurses are dressed in now, you know. They have the little kids, you know, the little designs that be on the uniform. When we just had the white uniform, you walked into a hospital, the gloom, doom. But now you go to a hospital, mm-hmm. you see the various colors. And it also, too, depends on what kind of color. You have a smooth blue. You know, if you got too much red, you know, maybe somebody might mm-hmm. go ballistic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So they're very particular. So, you know, art okay. plays a big part.
Okay, Carmen.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I just want to leave people with a sense that, you know, since I was reading from the Bible, you know, seek and you shall find. I think it's important to recognize that change starts with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that there's a lot of resources. And I want to put a little plug in for an organization that I strongly believe in. It's called CURB, which is Citizens United for a Responsible Budget. Mm-hmm. And what the whole impetus is to switch that funding from jails to resources for the community and programs that we need.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with Arlene that there are a lot of resources available. Downtown Chrysalis is an amazing resource. There are a lot of work source programs out there for people. When you need something, just seek and you shall find. You know, mm-hmm. there are programs out there for people, but you have to take that step. And you got to make that decision to bring change about in your life. And that is step number one to changing our society.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Carmen.
You're welcome.
Arlene?
I just want to just reiterate what Marlon and Carmen and yourself, Melvin, has already said. There are a lot of resources out there, and there are a lot of support groups out there. You know, we're all going through something at, you know, different times, and we may just meet someone and just share your experience with them. You know, a lot of times people are going through the same thing. We don't know it until we talk about it. And also, we just want you to continue to support the LAP with Carmen's creative writing workshop. And once again, it's Thursday, December the 20th at from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And that's at the LAP Village Community Room, 526 San Pedro Street.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Ms. Arlene Anthony. And for more information about arts and recovery at the LAMP, visit www.lampcommunity.org or www.lampartproject.org or look up LAMP Arts Project on Facebook. Next week, we will have a special show looking back at the events and some of the interviews from the Qumran Report in 2012. And on Monday, January the 7th, 2013, my in-studio guest would be Reginald Fagan. Now, before we close off, we still got a little time. Let me get about 30 seconds each from our two in-studio guests. Let's go with Marlon and Carmen again, about 30 seconds each.
The God of all comfort who comfort us allows us to comfort others.
Beautiful.
And that's in regards to what Carmen was saying. It starts with you first.
Okay. Carmen.
Well, like I said, you know, seek and you shall find. Get out there and find what is it that you, what makes you feel right about yourself and let that flourish. And we each have that light within us. And that's what you have to nurture.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind what the external world is telling you to do. You know, your heart will be there to guide you.
Mm-hmm. One little quick thing about the workshop. Is a workshop for just LAMP community members?
Or, okay. No, it's open to anybody. I mean, this is the time slot that they've made available for this Thursday on the 20th. It's open to everybody. You know, you just got to knock on the door and we'll let you in.
Okay, you sign up right there at the workshop. Okay, now I would like to extend a special thanks to my co-host, Arlene Anthony, my in-studio guests, Carmen Vega and Marlon Pope. Please check out our past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, skidrow.la, and dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. Thank you.
Good.
Great show.